Good morning. This is Fran Michel here with Joe Clement to discuss The Young Karl Marx, a film we strongly recommend. It's directed and co-written by Raoul Peck, best known recently for the documentary I Am Not Your Negro about James Baldwin. The Young Karl Marx is a cinematically and narratively straightforward dramatization of the lives of Marx and Frederick Engels in the 1840s leading up to the writing of the Communist Manifesto. It opens with some of Marx's journalism for the Rheinische Zeitung, which leads to the paper being closed down by the Prussian state and Marx being exiled to France with his wife, the once aristocratic Jenny von Westphalen. In Paris, he becomes good friends and collaborators with Friedrich Engels, the son of a manufacturer, who has recently written The Condition of the Working Class in England, thanks in part to the access provided by his partner, the working class Mary Burns. Political conflicts lead to further displacements onto Brussels and then London. Along the way, they encounter and critique the idealist young Hegelians, the anarchist Pierre-Joseph Proudhon, and the Christian communist Wilhelm Weitling. Marx and Engels join the League of the Just and persuade them to become the Communist League and to change their motto from "All men are brothers" to "Workers of the world unite." In the film's closing sequence, Marx and Engels, with the assistance of Jenny and Mary, write the League's manifesto.
This is a film that Raoul Peck describes as about being the evolution of ideas in Marx, Engels, and Jenny's lives, and these ideas having to do with how the insurgent working classes and the intelligentsia breaking off from the bourgeoisie were trying to coordinate an understanding of what's going on in the world and where power comes from in the midst of all of these industrial revolutions.
Before the film starts, before the narrative starts, there's a text on screen explaining that in 1843, Europe, ruled by absolute monarchs, wracked by crises, famine, and recession, is on the verge of change. The Industrial Revolution transforms the world's order. Workers' organizations are founded based on a communist, quote-unquote, communist utopia in which all men are brothers. Two young Germans will disrupt this notion, thereby transforming the struggle and the world's future. So the particular turn that introduces and sets up that we see in the course of the film is this shift from Weitling, for instance, talking about all men being brothers, that sort of utopian ideal that perhaps moral suasion will make everything better, instead recognizing that, as someone asks in response to that statement, are the bourgeoisie and the workers brothers? No, the bourgeoisie are not the brothers of the workers. To recognize that conflict and the need for struggle to actually accomplish change is a big sort of turning point in the arc of the film.
It's about how Marx comes into contact with the world of work, with the bourgeois capitalist economy, through his own experience as a writer, but then also through Friedrich Engels, who's the son of a well-to-do manufacturer and who himself is basically in line as an heir to his father's industrial empire, is like going to get a nice seat in the company and probably get his own factory someday. And what we see there is, you know, the mass form of the capitalist mode of production and the impoverished proletariat.
We do get glimpses of the condition of the working class in England, the book that Marx comments he admires, because Engels has done something colossal. He's the first one to actually write this up, to have an understanding and description of the impact of industrialization on workers in Manchester and Leeds. And so we see, you know, the factory floor with all of these looms. We see child laborers. Actually, the first time we see the Ehrman and Engels factory in Manchester, there's a work stoppage because some of the workers have sabotaged the machinery because someone has, because of working such long hours, fallen asleep at the job and lost several fingers, which means she's going to lose her job because she can't do it anymore. The long hours, the difficult conditions, all are part of the misery capitalism is creating for workers.
And yet there's a tension here. There's this great scene where Engels goes down into the Irish pub and he's, you know, immediately seen as slumming is the word we have for it today. But he, you know, has this earnestness about him that is, you know, kind of endearing but not actually really compelling to everyone there, and he gets socked in the face, but wins the attention and eventually affection of Mary Burns, who is also working in Engels' factory, and she, in this movie, is made an example of when she stands up to Engels' father. She has an important but understated role. Raoul Peck decided to foreground the Irish segment of the working class in this film. There was a lot of, you know, already international working class in Britain. The Irish were the first overseas colony of a capitalist country, England. And so there's this broad identification with the Irish among working class people who are white, even if they don't necessarily know they're Irish, as part of this kind of underclass phenomenon in American society that first started with the Irish, even though the Irish eventually would win, you know, whiteness in America before a lot of other people.
Yeah, when they are trying to figure out who are the troublemakers in the factory, someone suggests it must be the Irish who are causing this trouble. And turns out actually perhaps it was. But they're particularly militant and they're marked as sort of the scapegoats, the ones to blame. I mean, there are a number of points where particular groups are singled out or we're given the opportunity to recognize the way that that happens. There are a couple of anti-Semitic comments about Marx in the course of the film. There's one point where they're walking through the streets, they see the cops, and Marx says to Engels, "Are your papers in order?" And you know, they don't like foreigners. So we have this little chase scene of them running away from the police. So the struggle of the immigrant is visible here as well. There's actually one scene that has a whole bunch of these things all at once when they try to go into Engels' club to get out of the rain and encounter his father's friend, Mr. Naylor, another manufacturer.
They get into this chummy conversation, and it becomes clear that Engels' father is friends with Naylor, and he says, "I'm always asking about you, Freddy." But Marx refuses to join in the politeness and calls Naylor out for being an employer of child labor, and Naylor argues that if he doesn't employ child labor, then his competitors will, and they will have the advantage on producing and selling at a profit, and they'll be able to squeeze him out. And this is an important point that Marx has to make about capitalism. Businesses that aren't ruthless get rooted out, and that there are structural forces and conditions behind individual choices.
One of the things that happens in that encounter where they meet Naylor and he says, "Well, child labor is not harmful to the health." And I think it's Mary Burns who says, "Not harmful to your health." It's harmful to their health, after all. He says, "Well, it's just how it is. That's how society works. It's always going to be like that." And Marx says, "No, it's not always going to be like that. It hasn't always been like that." One of the things that comes up there and at several points in the film is the historical contingency of capitalism or any mode of production. There were serfs, there have been slaves, there have been wage workers, there have been peasants, but although it's always a class antagonism, it's not always the same kind of class antagonism. And that particular kind of relation and situation that Naylor talks about is specific to capitalism. And it's important to recognize that capitalism is not just how things always have been and must always be. That might be one of the reasons that we start with that opening scene, peasants gathering wood in the forest, and we hear Marx's journalism where he's talking about the nature of theft that may or may not constitute, because there was a concerted move to privatize the commons, things that rights that people had had for hundreds of years, thousands of years, time out of mind, had been able to, you know, use common land, gather wood, glean fruit, graze their animals, and in this instance, gather wood that had fallen off trees. And they're being ridden down by Prussian soldiers wielding axes and swords and killing them all. And this, there's actually a dream sequence about the horror of it later on. The turns from capitalism, from feudalism to capitalism, is that moment of privatizing the commons and therefore compelling people to go into wage work because they have no way to support themselves and survive without wage labor.
And it also just points to a different relationship to resources. There's, you know, a lot to be said about the Industrial Revolution making our lives better, but the way that it comes packaged in the capitalist form, which is about exploiting people's needs rather than providing for them. The old ways have an appeal too, and it's not necessarily in the work of having to go out and collect your own stuff, but having access to your own subsistence.
Yeah, and not being compelled, therefore, to turn your own labor into a commodity for sale to whoever will pay you for it, for whatever you can get for it, because that is, you know, one of the sort of fundamentally alienating features of labor under capitalism.
In the last few minutes that we have of this review of the young Karl Marx, let's talk about the telos of this film, which is the writing of the Communist Manifesto. It was published in 1848, and it is one of the most well-read documents in world history, second only by the Bible.
It's written to be read. They produce this document because they want to have not only a statement of their beliefs, but something that is short enough and easy enough to understand that every worker can read it, can make sense of it, can learn it, can understand what's wrong with the system that we've got now and how to change it and what kinds of things to look forward to.
It spells out a lot of context about political conditions to make clear that we have to look at the world as it is to understand where we want to get. And it has a very brief statement about where we think the next major step should be, and it's this 10-point plan.
They acknowledge that it's going to be different in different places, but usually they are things like abolition of property in land and application of all rents of land to public purposes. Wouldn't that be nice in Portland?
They call for a heavy progressive or graduated income tax.
Which we have moved toward at some points in history, but not only moving away from that and collapsing the graduated scale in the 50s, we had a 90% marginal tax rate on the wealthiest, and that would be something we could return to.
They call for the abolition of all rights of inheritance, which would really put a big dent in how capital reproduces itself. Thomas Piketty's Capital in the 21st Century is not as radical as Marx, but it underscores the fact that capital and wealth is inherited. It builds itself through inheritance, and we experience something like dynastic power ruling through inherited capital.
Indeed, we do. They also advocate confiscation of the property of immigrants and rebels, which I guess is if people have left and they've, gone to one of their other 60 houses off in the Cayman Islands or someplace, then their house should be taken. Seems reasonable.
They call for the centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. Today, some might point to the Federal Reserve as an example of this, but Marx would have probably been more interested in what are called public banks.
Centralization of the means of communication and transport in the hands of the state. So great. So we could have free public transportation, and we could have
Municipal broadband.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. They, talk about the extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state and bringing into cultivation wastelands and the improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan, which, is Marx's scientific understanding of what capitalism is doing to the world. He understood that we are depleting the world of its natural nutrients and balances, and that the competitive anarchic system of capitalism doesn't really have an interest in that as long as it can exploit this land and then that land and then this land.
They call for the equal liability of all to work, establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. This is before the age of agribusiness and intensively technological and machine-oriented agriculture. But the question of everybody having to work comes up when they encounter Mr. Naylor and point out that, if we got rid of expropriation, golly, you'd have to actually work yourself, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and this is one of the very common ways in which unions would rouse and agitate workers to take up the class struggle cause.
There's also some stuff about combining agriculture and manufacturing and abolishing the distinction between town and country. I'm not sure I quite get that one.
I think that's another call to break down class distinctions, class rule. The bourgeoisie come from the burghs, the cities, and they rule over the country as a kind of colonized territory.
And finally, free education for all children in public schools. Yes!
And the abolition of children's factory labor in its present form, and the combination of education with industrial production, which does happen all the time in Marx's home country of Germany, but not so much in the United States.
So clearly some of these things are things that we have accomplished to some extent that have been accomplished since the mid-19th century. There are a number of these things that the Communist Party was calling for in 1848 are widely agreed at this point to be pretty good ideas, or at least they were at one point. Agreed to be pretty good ideas, but they should be revisited.
This has been Joe Clement and Fran Michel talking about Raoul Peck's The Young Karl Marx. You can find it at the library.